With 2 weeks to go until the deadline, we review who's hot and who's not so far in pre-season. We chat about when we could use our chips and provide updates on our ever-changing drafts. Hello there, welcome back to the FPL Pod. It's nice to be back with you. And today, to show our commitment to the podcast, we have gone global. Myself and Jules are working on the Women's World Cup in Australia. So it's actually the evening here. I'm in Sydney. Firstly, Jules, good evening to you. Where are you at the moment?
Hi, Kelly. Hi, Sam. Hi, everyone. I'm in Brisbane, where it's lovely and sunny despite being the winter here. It's a lovely days we had.
Yeah, you look like you've got a bit of a tan there, actually, Jules. You've only been there a couple of days. That's a French tan, actually, isn't
yeah, it?
Yeah, it is. That's a French tan.
Yeah, but I look very Australian, so I'm glad you noticed it.
Yeah, I'm in Sydney where it's a little bit colder and I've just presented England winning against Denmark. So I'm in a very good mood. Sam, what about you? Back in Hertfordshire, flying the flag for us back there. I don't know what day it is, let alone what time it is back there, but it looks lighter than it is here.
It's lunchtime. Should be having lunch right now instead. I'm talking to you two. And it's raining at the minute. The weather's terrible.
I tell you what, let's try and lift the spirits by reminding people that it is just 2 weeks to go until the Premier League season restarts. That does mean that it's 2 weeks to go until the first FPL deadline of the season is ahead of us. That means we need to get these squads sorted out. So we've already done the launch show. We did the launch podcast as well that week. And we are now here, hopefully, to update you on things because, of course, teams are back in pre-season and we're learning things about every single team and every single player. And to show you just how much enthusiasm there is for FPL now, there are almost 3 million managers active in the game. And a reminder, you can also join our FPL Pod League. The code is IB3WL. Okay, Jules, tell me, you're out in Australia, but we know you're our resident football... I was going to call you a geek, but I'm not going to call you a geek. Obsessive is what I'm going to call you. You watch everything.
Yeah, that's right.
This time last year, you were across everything in pre-season. You were telling us about all of the games. Have you been able to keep across everything for us this year?
Yeah, of course, Kelly, of course. And I knew that you were going to ask me. For example, if you are looking for a striker... It's good to know that Nico Jackson has been doing really well with Chelsea so far, scoring two goals in the two friendly against Brighton and Newcastle. Christopher Nkunku played behind him against Newcastle and they linked up quite well. We saw Kai Havertz scoring as a number eight for Arsenal against Barcelona, for example. And even before that, against the MLS All-Star, we saw Mason Mount playing quite well with Manchester United, although he started against Real Madrid and they lost 2-0 in that game. We saw Liverpool scoring a lot of goals, four against Karlsruhe, four against Greuther Fürth, conceding two in the first game and four in the second game. But with different options up front and in midfield, we saw Cody Gakpo also playing in midfield, for example. Szoboszlai as well. Trent playing in midfield and playing really well. A lot of goal scorers for Liverpool. Darwin Nunez scored three goals in two games. Diogo Jota scored. Luis Diaz scored two as well. Mo Salah scored. So if you're a Liverpool fan or if you fancy Liverpool players, they look pretty much in form. Certainly going forward, they concede loads of goals, but still going forward, pretty good. Who else did I mention? Manchester City. Julian Alvarez started twice and Erling Haaland came on and scored two goals in one of their two friendlies. But yeah, it looks like a lot of the big names, big players already in form.
Sam, of course, he's travelled to the other side of the world. He's working on a completely different tournament with the women and he's still kept across everything. I imagine it's been the same for you. And I imagine as a result, you've been tinkering with your team. And how many drafts do you reckon you're on now?
About a million, probably. I've been a bit obsessive. There's been a few players though that haven't left my draft. We'll talk more about that later, that have just been in there the whole time. And then others that have impressed during the summer series in particular. And then I've kind of gone, oh, maybe I'll see if I can create a draft with them in. And then, of course, I've been keeping a close eye on Spurs. I'm trying to work out who's the best asset from them over their last couple of matches. So yeah, it's been a really good and informative preseason, I think, this one. We're learning quite a lot about the way that teams might set up, particularly those teams with new managers.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll learn a lot between now and the deadline as well. Still a couple of weeks to go and still plenty more games to come. And our resident expert, Jules, will keep you across anything you miss from pre-season, I'm sure. Plenty of decisions then we've got to make as FPL managers. And one of the most tough ones, well, this is the one I find the toughest, I think, every single season, is team names. You guys, I'm going to hold my hands up here. I don't like doing this, but you guys are much better with team names than me. I'm always incredibly boring. Sam, have you settled on one?
Yeah, but it's, you say this, Kelly, but I'm also incredibly boring because mine always has the same name every year. So
still going with Toby.
Still best in Alderweireld. Always going with Toby. He's the best.
I kind of feel like one time you've got to get Harry Kane in there, surely.
So one season they were called No Kane, No Gain. Mm-hmm. And then Toby left. And since that point, it's been best in Alderweireld. And now I kind of feel like I can never change it.
Jules, you're very good at your team names. You've normally got some good puns in there. What are you going for this year?
Sambion Ice for me. I mean, same as last season, although it didn't bring me much luck last season, but I just like it. And I'm hoping that this time it will bring me far higher ranks at the end of the season.
Okay, I take it back. I'm not giving you any credit for that if you're just repeating your team names from last season. I'm going to have to win this year, on at least on team names front. That's something that I'm working on at the moment. We also tweeted from @OfficialFPL asking you guys what your team names are going to be. And there's some brilliant ones. Adri says Bow and Arrow. DJM_Blue said Eze come, Eze go. Eze could be a player to watch this season as well. So that could be a really good team name. Daniel R. Thomas said, I've gone with Mount Evra Est, new and old Manchester United. I liked it anyway. FPL Ali says pick and blank because my luck is awful. And he attached a photo of Emmanuel Dennis with a -3 when he triple captained him a few years ago. Yes, we all remember that. As if you've still got that picture saved on your phone, your camera roll. Mine has long gone. Bruno Dos Tres, that's what Roberto's going with. FPL Prem Tipster says Thomas the Frank Engine, and Tommy Donohoe says Shiver Me Timbers FC. Some really good team names coming in there. So don't forget to get a good name in before the deadline, which is in a couple of weeks. Okay, then let's look slightly further into the distance, because Sam, when we're planning our teams, you obviously don't pick a team just for game week one. You pick them for the long haul, but you also have to look at your team and think when you're likely to use things like your chips, so your wild card and various things like that. You have to pinpoint fixtures early on, don't you?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I think it's really important to look at the fixture ticker, look at the potential swings, where you might want to invest in certain clubs over others, where you might want to place your wild card, and then also think really carefully about those chips, because a lot of new managers coming into the game for the first time will look at the chips sitting there and think, oh, I'll just use them. But of course, you can only use each of them once. And later on in the season, there are going to be opportunities where we'll be able to do that. So we've already got a couple of game weeks that are blanks already. So we know that there will be doubles in the future. And holding chips for that is really important. So having that kind of strategy in the back of your mind that says, this is when I might use my first wild card. So I might want a team that looks like this to get me to that point is a really, really important strategy.
You mentioned it even on our launch podcast. You already had kind of identified when you might potentially use your wild card.
Yeah. So there are a few windows that I think are really potentially good options. So obviously we've got the three international breaks, game week 4, game week 8, game week 12. They feel like nice swing periods because you get a couple of weeks where you can use them. But then there are also a couple of fixture swing dates. So just after game week 5 and just after game week 9, there's real big swings for some of the big clubs in terms of the fixtures that they have coming up. So using them in those periods could mean that you're able to create a great team leading in, focusing on some of the big clubs, and then build a better one coming out of that, focusing on the ones that have the fixtures following on.
A lot of people, Jules, tend to use their wild cards in international breaks because they have a little bit longer to pick. I know you're quite an early chip user, aren't you? Is that just an instinct thing? You just decide when you're going to do it, or do you have a bit of a plan as well?
No, I think it's really hard to pick your team and your squad to start the season anyway. As much as we can watch preseason matches, as we said, analyze them, trying to second guess sometimes what managers are going to do and who's going to play where and what kind of form and all that kind of stuff. I think it's really hard until you've seen those teams actually play, some of the players that you thought could do well, until you've seen them perform, you don't really know. And I think it's fair that usually the first international break of the season, so let's say September, early September it is this season, sometimes it's a bit later, but by then you would have watched 3, 4, 5 game weeks maybe, depending on when the first international break is. So you know a bit better, okay, yes, we saw this team doing well, this team changing that tactics, this player started the season but now he's going to be on the bench, this one came off the bench, did really well, you can expect him to start on the back of the international break. You know far more. And that's why I don't think it's a bad thing or a bad idea sometimes to play in that first international break, especially if your start of the season has been average, let's put it that way. And that's why sometimes, very rarely, because I usually start really well, but when I don't, you know, I feel it's a good time to play.
Of course, you always start so well, don't you, Jules? I forgot about that. Yeah, reminder, you do get 2 wild cards a season. The first one you have to use by the game week 20 deadline. I know a few new players often get caught out thinking they can hold it and then wondering why it's just disappeared. So yeah, make sure you use that by the halfway point. It was roughly the halfway point of the season. Sam, we also talk a lot about fixture swings. We've already mentioned them a few times. There are obvious fixture swings. When you're looking at the fixtures early on, who have you noticed as kind of starting well and maybe teams to target, and then how it changes?
So if you look at game week 1 through 5, you've got teams like Arsenal, Chelsea, Spurs are in there, Man City are in there, Liverpool are in there. Most of them do stay there, apart from by the time we get to game week 5, we see teams like Spurs drop out, and then Newcastle, Manchester United, Aston Villa, their fixtures get really nice around game week 5. So you can kind of start to position yourself as, okay, I'm going to go in with these players from these teams at certain price points for game weeks 1 through 5. And then either through wildcard or through using your transfers, you can move over to the other teams that then have nice fixtures too. And then when we look beyond that for game week 10, which is when there's another big fixture swing, we then get teams like Arsenal coming back in, like Liverpool. Liverpool stay around for most of the opening part of the season. So investing in them feels like a good idea. But then we've got teams like West Ham and Aston Villa and Crystal Palace and Brighton, who become good assets. And as Jules says, by that point, we'll be able to know how well these teams have started the season, whether the European fixtures are having an impact on their abilities and their position in the Premier League. So I think it's really useful to kind of look at the fixtures, divide them up into these periods of time where you think the teams might be useful to invest in, and then also use the eye test, use what we're seeing on the pitch and the underlying stats to work out whether we actually should be investing in these periods. Because just because the fixtures are good doesn't mean that the form will be too.
Something else that we have to consider, and we don't always have to consider this before the start of the season, but we've already had a blank game week announcement, well, two blank game week announcements, in fact. So game week 2, both Luton and Burnley will blank. That's because Luton were due to host this match, but they can't guarantee that their stadium will be ready as they prepare for life in the Premier League. And a little bit further on in game week 18, Brentford and Manchester City will both blank. That's because of Manchester City being in Club World Cup action. Does that change your FPL plans at all, Jules? Because I know there was a few nice options, particularly with Luton. And kind of early on, Luton and Burnley, maybe some budget options that now we already know we're going to have to put on our bench.
Yeah, that's right. Remember defensively, we mentioned some of the centre-backs especially, who are quite cheap. If you need a player that you can maybe start for home games, we said, because we can expect them, especially Luton, to try to play. So near the start of the season, quite defensive to get some points under their belt. That blank in game week 2 could have an impact, slightly maybe, because you were never going to get 3 Luton players in your squad, let's be honest here. No offense, sorry, Luton fans and Luton players, but that's very unlikely. For the City blank, it was to be expected because of the Club World Cup, of course, after winning the Champions League. So you will have to manage. And if game week 18 is without City, you should be able to plan that before and to prepare for it and not be too impacted by it.
Yeah, in a way, actually, it's quite nice to know early on, isn't it, Sam? And to have it on our radar and also to just get it out of the way almost.
Yeah, and I think you can plan around Luton and Burnley for game week 2 fairly easily by managing your pre-season squad and just thinking about how your or who your enablers are going to be. And then, like Joel says, you've got 18 game weeks until Man City blank. So in that time, you can definitely form a strategy that says, how many City players am I investing in? And the reality is, you're probably only going to have those 3. Maybe you might have a Brentford player in there too. So with one transfer, you just move everybody to the bench, then they come back in. Or you use your wild card effectively, play it late, and then know that you can take them out and then bring them back in again afterwards.
Yeah, and also just to point it out, I know a lot of people use the fixture ticker. That's something I know you look at a lot, Sam. Before the blank game week, Luton were actually second on the fixture ticker. So having the blank has had a bit of an impact, hasn't it?
Yeah.
In terms of where they are on that.
Yeah, it's moved them right down to the bottom now with the blank game week in there too. So it does have an impact, but it's also something that I think we need to be mindful of, because that one fixture disappearing has had a massive impact on where they're sitting on the ticker. So it looks like they're a bit of a non-option, but that's because everyone else plays too. So do look at the other fixtures in there. And sometimes it's useful to look at the fixture ticker as periods of time and see where the hop on, hop off periods are for each club, because then you can target certain game weeks for each of them and move forward in a better way, maybe, than looking at the fixture period over a longer period of time and having it be kind of swayed by a blank game week.
Also, a lot of people, Sam, when it comes to the big players, they sometimes kind of move them around, don't they? So you can go from a Haaland to a Kane. But it's risky, isn't it? Particularly if you've got value in them, because you lose that.
Yeah, and it's risky because there's not really a bad fixture for the premium. So just because one has got what looks like a great fixture on paper doesn't mean that the other one's going to blank. And I think for me, it's not something I like to do. I don't like to upside chase and move my premiums around. I like to be loyal to the premiums and then move the other players in my team around. And I think swapping between Haaland and Kane, or between Haaland and Salah, which is even harder to do because you've got to move the money from forward to midfield. So you're definitely going to be at least taking a minus four in order to do that because you've got to swap positions with that budget. Always feels like a risky strategy, particularly when you're planning to make that change back again afterwards.
Okay, I was going to save it to the end of the podcast and ask you for draft updates, but I just really want to know, Sam, have you managed to get Harry Kane in your team?
So there's one. I've got two drafts at the moment. One's got Harry Kane in it. One hasn't.
We said it, Kelly. We knew that was going to change.
Which are you leaning towards?
The one without. Like, it's really hard because the one without, I like everybody in there, even the bench. But the one with, there's some bigger compromises. I'll talk them through at the end. But there's some big compromises for having Kane as well as Haaland and keeping Trent. As Jules learned when he was trying to build his first squad, that when you put them all in, you have to compromise on other positions. And the other positions, I don't think I want to compromise on because those guys have been performing well in pre-season or I'm expecting good things from them as a club. So I am leaning to going without him. But you also know that the fear is absolutely real. And that draft with him is still sat there going, have me. So I don't know what I'm going to do.
He's still in yours, isn't he, Jules?
Yeah. I mean, I've got my latest one has Salah, Trent, Kane and Haaland in the team. So the rest of the team is pretty competitive. That's all I'm saying. The rest is very competitive as well.
Right. We'll do drafts when we get to the end of the podcast, because I want to go early and I'm itching to find out who you've both put in. But I kind of want to find out a little bit more about how you got there, and I want to talk about a few more specific players in the game. And I find it really interesting at this point, comparing my team to other people's team and looking at how highly owned players are. And interestingly, the three most owned players so far ahead of the season are Haaland, Saka and Estupiñán. Jules, surprised by any of those? Say Haaland. You are not surprised by Haaland.
No, not Haaland. And not Saka either. Maybe you could be surprised by the gap between Haaland and the second highest owned. Estupiñán at 50%. I think that's a surprise in itself. Not that you pick him because he's very good. And we saw certainly on the back end of last season, or the second half of last season, how really, really good he's been. And at 5 million is a very good value for money if you want. But 50%, like half of the game owning him is huge, I think. But yeah, like I'm all for it. Wonderful player for the other two. There's no surprises.
There was me thinking I was different picking him, but clearly not. 50% of managers own him. Maybe that says a lot about me as a manager, actually, to be fair. Taking a look by position then, who's been the most popular? We'll start with the forwards. Haaland, again, unsurprising, he's the most popular player in the game. Haaland is the most owned. Over 86% of managers have him. So Sam, that 14 million price tag has not put anyone off.
No, and nor should it really. I mean, he deserves to have that price tag put on him because last season he was so good. And I think we'll see the same again this season. And going without him, I did do a draft that didn't have Haaland in
it. Did you feel sick?
And then quickly, yeah. So I absolutely loved it because it was a lovely draft and everyone else was in there. And I was like, this looks great. And then I remembered it didn't have Haaland and then felt quite sick about the idea and quickly deleted that one as an option. So, and I think that's clearly what 86% of managers have decided, that he's the forward to choose, because there's quite a big jump then down to Gabriel Jesus, who's in second with just 31% ownership.
Yeah, I was going to say about Gabriel Jesus. Jules, what have you made of his pre-season? Is he a good Arsenal asset to have? We talked about the increase in price of the midfielders, and I do wonder if that's enhanced his appeal because he's an 8 million forward.
Yeah, I think you're right. Although, remember, he was highly owned at the start of last season too, and to be fair, delivered, started really well. Then there was obviously the World Cup, the injury, etc. But started really well, certainly in the first half of the season. And again, I think we know that he's not going to score 35 league goals, but they're going to be goals shared in all the Arsenal squad. And they will create a lot, and you can expect him to be quite regularly, I think, on the score sheet. So I think he's a good option. I think Christopher Nkunku, being the third highest owned forward, is a bit more surprising, not because of his talent or anything. It's just that it's a bit unknown. Yes, he scored a lot of goals in the Bundesliga. Yes, he looked good in the friendlies that he played for Chelsea so far, either as a number nine himself or as a second striker. But he still don't know how he's going to do in the Premier League when the Premier League really starts. So it's interesting, I think, that Nkunku is above Watkins, above Kane, above Isaac, for example, even Darwin, Ferguson, all those kind of guys. But I like it. I like it that the managers are going for something a bit different in Nkunku.
Yeah, I wonder if it's the fact that they've got Maurizio Pochettino there, and the fact that it's a Chelsea forward at 7.5, people are thinking if they can get on that early. And there's some real kind of competition in around that price bracket, isn't there, Sam? We mentioned Jesus and Cuckoo's 7.5. And then actually, just behind those two, it's Watkins. He's the fourth most popular forward. Now, I really thought, when we did that launch show, do you remember, Sam, doing it the day the game launched, myself and you did the YouTube show. And when we saw Watkins's price, we thought that 8 was quite steep, didn't we?
Yeah, and I still do. And I think that there are other players at Villa that you could invest in that are going to be cheaper than Watkins. Look, I think Watkins is going to score goals. I think he'll do really well this season. But at that 8 million, he's 0.5 more than so many of the other decent forward options. And I think a lot of people have been going for the Chelsea boys because it's very difficult to know what's going to happen in the midfield at Chelsea at the minute. So picking one of the forwards makes a lot more sense, I think, at this point. But with Watkins, I look at him, I watched him in pre-season, he's looked good, but so have Villa generally. And I do think that there are some, like Douglas Luiz, for example, in the midfielder slot, who you could invest in and is going to save you a significant amount of money because he's just 5.5. So had Watkins been 7.5 and been alongside the likes of Nkunku and Darwin, players like that, I think I would have been much more inclined to go with him than I am at 8.
Yeah, so Kane is just behind him. So he's the fifth most owned forward. We've already discussed him on this podcast in length. I think we both know where Sam and Jules sit in terms of being in, firmly in the Harry Kane fan club. Whether Sam's in the ownership club, we'll have to wait and see in a couple of weeks' time. Who else, when you look at those most owned forwards, Sams, who else jumps out at you? Any surprises in there for you?
No, I'm kind of surprised that as many people have gone on the Darwin train as I have. So he was in my first draft, and actually he's one of those players that has never left.
Oh, he's out of mine. I've got rid of him now.
Interesting. So he's been playing really well in pre-season. I've been really impressed by him. And actually I've spent a lot of time watching Liverpool in the last couple of weeks, and in training, he's looked great. They're putting a lot of focus on him. He's obviously had the shirt number move. I think he will have a really good season. His link up with Mo Salah has come on so much since last season for what we're seeing now in pre-season. So I've been quite impressed by Darwin. And as a result, I think I'm almost locked in to go with him in that second striker position now, because there's something really attractive about Liverpool's fixtures right the way through the first wildcard window. And I do think that they will have a better season. Defensively, they're still wobbling and they've lost a lot of key personnel in the midfield, but they are going to have to score goals, and they've got the personnel to score a lot of goals. And I think he will get the nod up top.
Jules, you had Evan Ferguson in your first draft. He is seventh most owned. Is he still in your draft?
He's not anymore, no, because I had to obviously make some cuts, you know, to bring in Mo Salah as well as
You've had to cut from a 6 million striker. That kind of says it all about your team.
But I think Ferguson is a really good shout. We mentioned him on that first show, didn't we? In the sense that this should be the season really where all the promises that we saw, all the really good things that we saw in the second half of last season just are there and are even better, and that he keeps improving if he can stay fit. I think it could be very, very interesting. They have other options to play up front, like João Pedro we mentioned before. But you would think that De Zerbi has worked so hard already on bringing Evan Ferguson to this kind of level that they're going to keep playing him and that he's going to keep improving. So I think Ferguson, even for that price, is still a very interesting shout.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what happens at Brighton. I've been quite excited by them in pre-season, so excited that one of their forwards has made it into my team. I won't reveal who, but you can probably guess. It's someone that someone that I just wanted to see something from in pre-season, so I had a reason to bring him in. Yes, João Pedro, unfortunately, in the blue and white of Brighton these days, is in my team at 5.5. But there's quite a few options at Brighton. I am worried, though, about the rotation still. I am worried. So
he's looked really good in pre-season.
It's the price of 5.5 I needed to save. I thought about having Ferguson after what you said, Jules. I was actually almost persuaded by you, which is a surprise in itself. But then the rotation worried me. But I thought if he's 0.5 million cheaper, I don't mind risking it and seeing how it goes. That's my theory at the moment. So I think he'll probably stay in my team, to be honest. But yeah, we don't really know what that Brighton attack is going to look like, do we, Sam?
No, they have been playing together quite a bit in pre-season, and that's been encouraging for me because João Pedro was in my first draft and is still in both of my drafts that I've currently got going. I like him. I think you don't spend 30 million on a player to not play them a lot, particularly as he's their, you know, their biggest financial investment yet. So I like him, and I think Ferguson is a great option as well, but that price difference just makes me swing João Pedro's way.
Yeah, same. Okay, let's move on to the midfielders then, because as we said, Bukayo Saka, second most owned player in the game, top of the midfielders, obviously. Then behind him, Rashford, Mitoma, Bruno, Salah, Mbeumo, Odegaard, McAllister. I could go on. When you look at that list, Sam, what do you make of it? It's kind of the players you would expect, isn't it? It's a lot of the players that we spoke about in that launch podcast. There's no real standouts there.
No, and what's interesting for me is the ownerships. Like you're not seeing a massive amount of difference between them at the moment, like Bruno and Rashford. They're both up the top there, and you can see why, because people are playing with those 0.5s at the moment, and that 0.5 difference between Rashford, a lot of people will go, well, I'll have Bruno instead because I can invest that somewhere else. And it's the same with kind of Saka and Martinelli. That conversation exists there between those two as well, and Odegaard goes in that mix too. I think it's interesting that Salah isn't at the top this year, because normally going into game week one, we'd see Salah sitting right at the top of the midfielders for ownership. And he's what, fifth most owned midfielder in their game? And I think that's because people are compromising on how they are investing, because we have so many of these really nice options in the sort of 8 to 9 bracket that you can have, that people are going, well, maybe I can have two of those, as opposed to having Mo Salah and then a really cheap budget fifth midfielder. People are going all out in the midfield, and that's certainly a strategy that I've been looking at as well, and it does make for a really nice team.
I'm looking at the Rashford and Bruno Fernandes kind of dilemma, because I really wanted to have Rashford. I'm leaning towards Bruno because he is that bit cheaper because of penalties and the like. Although when I saw Rashford sign his new contract the other day, I was like, oh, he's got his new contract. He's going to want to celebrate. He's going to have a brilliant season. But I think I'll stick with Bruno. There's about an 18% ownership difference. 18% more people have found that 0.5 million. What have you seen in pre-season early on from Manchester United, Jules, that kind of sways your decision on those two?
Well, I thought it was interesting that against Real Madrid, we saw Rashford playing as a number 9, so in the centre, not on the left-hand side. Jadon Sancho played as a 9 against Arsenal and scored a good goal A big mistake by Gabriel, but it was still a good finish for him as a number 9. I think a lot of it will depend what happens with the number 9 that United are trying to sign. If they really get the guy they want, and right now it's Rasmus Højlund from Atalanta, if they get him, which I think right now looks likely, then there's no doubt where Rashford will play, and you could expect them to link up, actually play really well. If they miss out on the number 9, Højlund or somebody else, I don't know, then I think the temptation from Ten Hag might be to play Rashford as a 9. Whether that changes your decision or not, it depends on what you think. Not you or, you know, anybody else who's picked Rashford, but that will have an impact on, certainly on his displays and performances, maybe, whether he plays as a 9 or on the left-hand side. So we will have to see. But between the two, if you could find the plus 0.5, I would go with Marcus Rashford.
Okay. Any other things that you want to add on any of the midfielders that you've seen so far, or perhaps any of the trends that you've seen in midfielders, Sam?
I think the Mbeumo conversation is interesting, because we were all expecting him to be playing as the kind of major forward in that Brentford team in the absence of Tony. But actually, it's been Wissa who's impressed me the most when I've been watching Brentford. We've still seen Mbeumo doing the things that he does, you know, cutting in, taking shots from distance, but he's not been the kind of one that's in that forward slot. So My interest in him has waned a little bit over the last couple of weeks. It's not gone entirely, but he's a player that I'm now kind of less inclined to go with at the start.
Okay, good to know. Let's move on then to defenders. As we said, Estupiñán leads the way. Then Kieran Trippier is actually in at second. Jules, is he still in your team? You were surprised when Sam and I didn't have him.
Yeah, no, he's not in my current draft.
Because he's got no money, Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
He's got no money.
Exactly. Sven Botman, Sam, I think, convinced me the other day that why would you go for Trippier when you get Botman, who is much cheaper? And still a Newcastle defender with, you know, the point that comes with how solid they're going to be. So Trippier is not. I can see why he's still so popular, of course, and he takes set pieces where they've been very good from in last season especially, and very solid for most of the season, certainly the first half of the season. So yeah, Trippier there. But if someone had told you, I don't know, 18 months ago, that Estupiñán and Trippier would be the two most owned defenders in the game at the start of this season, you would have never believed it.
No, it's a very good point, actually. Shortly behind Trippier is Shaw. Trippier owned by 34.7% of managers at the time of recording. Shaw, 2% lower owned. Then it's Trent Alexander-Arnold, then Botman, then Stones, then Gabriel, then Bell. He is the most popular 4 million defender at the moment, isn't he, Sam, by far?
By far. And the one thing you should be careful of if you do invest in the most popular 4.0 is that if Luton have a bad start and people sell him, he'll quickly become 3.9. And then that's a problem for you, because if you've not kept any money in the bank, you don't have the ability to upgrade him to anybody else at that point. So it's something that I'm mindful of. I don't really like to own the most popular 4.0 just in case.
I'm going to give you a spoiler of my latest draft as well. I've actually gone a bit different because Luton have just signed Kabore and I've brought him into my team. He's also 4 million and I think he's going to play at fullback. I'm going to keep a close eye on it. But I just decided that I didn't want to be quite so template. I'm trying to be a little bit different. So being the rogue person that I am, I've changed my third sub to be different from everyone else because ultimately he's not probably going to play. So yeah, the 0.001% of managers that own him are me.
It's just you, Kel.
And yeah, probably he will be the player that I changed just before the deadline. But he's another one that potentially you could keep an eye on. Anyone else, Sam, in terms of when we look at defenders, any surprises? I was a little bit surprised to see Rhys James so far down the list, because I wonder, now he's back playing for Chelsea. He captained them, didn't he, in pre-season the other day as well. I wonder if maybe his ownership is going to soar at 5.5 million with the way Pochettino plays.
I think it probably will. I think there was a little bit of managers taking him out because that injury concern that people had over him in pre-season. I also think that there's the Chilwell factor and the fact that some people might go in that direction instead and cover the other side of the pitch. So I do think that you could share the time there. And I also think that when you look at Estupiñán for the opening few matches, the fixtures are great. And then they tail off quite significantly. And at that point, the Chelsea defensive fixtures ramp up massively. So I wonder whether there's an element of managers going with the Brighton guy first and then after game week four, moving over and covering out the Chelsea defence, because that's something that I've done in my new draft, is that I've kind of got Estupiñán in, even though I don't really like the fixtures long term, with a plan to move him to Chilwell or James when I know which one I prefer from game week four.
Jules, just quickly before we move on to goalkeepers, Trent Alexander-Arnold is the fourth most owned. Of course, he's had a massive price hike as well at 8 million. But as you mentioned before, he is playing in midfield for Liverpool. So actually, since we last recorded, have you seen even more value in that 8 million?
Yeah, I think he's been brilliant in pre-season. Again, those two games against like second division German opposition, don't take too much out of it, Karlsruhe and Greuther Fürth, but he's been great. He really has. And I know he's expensive, but don't forget that he's a defender who's going to play in midfield, who's going to be so much involved in everything that Liverpool do with the ball going forward. My fear is that he gets more second assists than direct assists or direct goals. So it's the great pass before the assist and before the goal.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing, because I think he's going to be quite heavily involved at the start of all the moves. But again, I think it's worth, if you don't want to put him straight away, just give him a bit of time. Look at the first few games and maybe leave some space in your squad to be able to bring him to your team, because I think that there's a potential to be an amazing season for Alexander-Arnold in midfield.
You'd need to leave some budget too though, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's kind of why I also want him in my squad. A, the fear of not having him when so many people are going to go for him. At the moment, he's almost 30% owned. And B, it feels easier to go away from him than it is to get to him, really.
100%.
Something else you have to think about when building your squad, isn't it, really? It's almost like if you know you're going to want someone more expensive, then maybe go with them from the start so that it's easier to just get down. Am I being an idiot there, Sam? Or is that something that you also subscribe to?
No, that's what I always try and do. Own the most expensive player in every position, although none of my drafts have had the most expensive midfielder yet. But that is how I try and play it, because it's very easy to move down. It's much, much harder to come up. So if you think that there's any point in this season that you might want to own Trent pre a wild card, then it's best to start the season with him, knowing that if he doesn't perform in the way that you want to or isn't worth the 8 million, that you can easily sell him down to, well, anybody else in the game that you fancy.
Okay, let's finish this positional stock check of who's buying who with goalkeepers. And the most owned goalkeeper in the game is a 4 million goalkeeper, Areola at West Ham. Sam, does that just show that a lot of people are doing set and forget goalkeepers and Areola's the most popular backup? I don't want to be mean to him.
Yes, absolutely. He's the most popular backup because people think that there's a chance that he might get some game time at West Ham this season, but they're going with a set and forget option. So they're either going with somebody like Ramsdale or Onana. So they're picking one of those 5 million goalies, but deciding they only want to spend 9 million in total. And therefore, Areola is the best of the 4 million category because there's a chance for some game time.
The two goalkeepers that you mentioned then, Ramsdale and Onana, are the second and third most owned. Then it's Pickford, Edison, Pope, Raya, Alisson, Leno, Martinez and Steele. No big surprises in there. I think probably the biggest surprise is Areola being top, to be honest. You'll be pleased, Jules, to see Ramsdale up there in second. But Onana, people putting faith in him early on.
Yeah, again, a bit what we said about Nkunku earlier, in the sense that he's a great goalkeeper, has amazing attribute with the ball, on his line, reflexes, etc. But again, he's never played in the Premier League. So will he adapt straight away? We saw him on his first game against Real Madrid's first start, conceding two goals, or United conceding two goals. So there's still a lot of question marks over any new signings who's never been in the Premier League before, you know, coming in and coming into your team. But again, you can be rewarded because you might have a wonderful start of the season where he's really solid, United are solid, and then you will be on something very good. Or you see him needing a bit of game time and a bit of experience in the Premier League to really get to his best. And if that's the case, then his start of the season might not be as good as what you wanted or what you expected. So it's just always a bit, I think, difficult with all those new signings, whether you put them straight in your team or you wait a little bit. And sometimes it's worth taking the gamble, sometimes isn't. It's up to every manager.
5 million, Sam. What did you make of his pricing? Because that's not a cheap goalkeeper, because there's nice 4.5 million options, and you could go for Ramsdale, and you know when you're going to get from him at the same price, but he's not quite with your premiums, the likes of Edison and Alisson.
No, but he went straight in my team because it saves me 0.5 on having Luke Shaw. So that 0.5 to cover out Manchester United is important, because at Arsenal, I can easily have a 5 million defender who will get some attacking returns over the course of the season and cover out Ramsdale's clean sheets that way. Whereas to do it the other way around at United, I have to pay the extra to have Luke Shaw. And yes, I'm probably not going to get attacking returns, but Onana looks like he's going to get save points. He's going to be involved in the distribution. So there's always the potential then for bonus points if the saves come in as well as a clean sheet. So for me, when he came in at 5, I was like, well, that's an absolute no-brainer, because it allows me to be on Manchester United without having to pay the extra 0.5. And the extra 0.5 makes a lot of difference across the rest of my team.
Okay, let's move on to drafts then, because we've been teetering across it the whole time. We've been hinting what we've done with our teams. Let's just reveal it. Sam, you've already said you've gone with Onana. That means you've broken up the rotating goalkeepers of Pickford and Leno, which straight away, the second, that we saw the price reveal, you said that was what you were going to do. So that's changed your mind. What else has changed in your team?
To be fair, the only thing that could have changed my mind on goalkeepers was the Manchester United goalkeeper arriving at 5 million. That was the only thing that was in the back of my mind that might change. So yeah, him and goal with Areola, just, you know, I'm one of those that's invested in him. And then a back five of Trent, Saliba, who I still think is a great option at 5 million. Estupiñán, Bell and Baia at the back. And then midfield five of Saka, Madison, Bruno Fernandes, Jarrod Bowen and George's old favourite. I've got Mudrić in there at the moment because I want to make sure that I've got a Chelsea player, and I'm not entirely sure who the best Chelsea player is at the moment. So he's kind of a placeholder until I decide on who that Chelsea asset might be. And then up top, a front three of Haaland, Darwin and João Pedro.
Okay, so there's a few changes there, but not massive ones.
Yeah, not huge changes. Jarrod Bowen's pre-season has really impressed me, so I wanted to bring him in. I wanted a Chelsea asset in there, so he's come in. I've lost my Chelsea defender in favour of Estupiñán, but as I said earlier, the plan is to swap that eventually anyway. But the front three remains the same, and the midfield, most of the midfield is as it was with Saka, Madison and Bruno.
Okay, so you sound like you're pretty set. I'm going to ask you in a moment your draft with Harry Kane, but it sounds like that one is the one you're leaning towards. Jules, how's your team looking? Tell us what you've done with your latest draft.
Yeah, so as I said before, I've got Trent, Salah, Kane and Haaland in this latest draft. I'm not saying this is the squad that will start the season, but this is what I have. I've gone for the Areola. What did you call it? Set and forget. That's so mean to him. I'll tell him. Mm-hmm. He's my boy, obviously, Paris born and bred. He helps. Him and Aaron Ramsdale, my other boy, in goal. Then defensively, I've got Trent, Botman and Saliba, who will be my three starters. And then Bell, that we mentioned earlier, and Bayer from Burnley. Okay, in midfield, it's a bit more complicated.
This is where it's going to be. Isn't
this
it?
Is right. Where it's all going to go.
Cheapest in the game. Go on.
So Mo Salah, of course. Then Brian Mbeumo, we mentioned him before. I think this is a no-brainer for me to have Mbeumo in your team, whether you go for one premium, two, three or four. I've got Enciso from Brighton, who finished the season so strongly, who's 5.5. I think a very good option. Nobody knows exactly who's going to start and when and where and how at Brighton right now, but I've got faith in Enciso. I've got Enzo Fernandez, who you know is going to start, and I expect him to start a bit higher up the pitch for Chelsea under Pochettino this season than he did as a number six in the second half of last season for Chelsea. And then my last spot in midfield is Garnacho. He started the last two friendlies for United. He looked really good. And I think especially if Rashford ends up playing as a number nine, then he'd be a very good option on the left-hand side for Ten Hag. And then up front, Haaland, Kane and Cameron Archer is my kind of number three striker.
How likely are you to stick with that?
So Trent, for the reasons that we explained before, he looked great in those friendlies. I love him in midfield. I think he's such a talented guy. But again, I'm not really sure how well he's going to do and how many points he's going to give you. Because again, I think he's going to be so heavily involved in all the build-up play. He might not have many assists or goals. Maybe. I just don't know. And I don't think anybody knows right now. So this is the only thing. But then, like you two said, it's easy to drop him then and go for a Stupinan or a 5 million defender, and then you save yourself 3 million to then strengthen your midfield. I would keep Salah and Bomo and then look at what I can do with the 3 million to upgrade on Enciso, Enzo, Garnacho, you know, all the kind of guys.
The thing is, it's missing all of the, like, not quite premium midfielders, isn't it? Like Saka, like Martinelli, like Madison, like Son, like Bruno Fernandes, like Rashford. Like none of them are in the team. And if one of them goes off, the problem I have with it, George, is that if one of them goes off, it's a wild card. Like you're wild card game week three.
But if Salah goes off straight away and has a 30 goal a season, like Kane, like Haaland, then suddenly you've got 90 goals between them three already in the league this season, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah. But you're also going to get that from the likes of Saka and Rashford and Bruno.
Not 30. Yeah, true.
I think if you add them together, what they will get compared to what Salah and Enciso get together.
Yeah, probably. You're right.
It will be close. So that's my thing, is that I think I would rather spread the love across the midfield and have more of the big hitters in there. But it does mean not having Salah, and I do hate that.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I think it's a really good debate.
Sam, talking about unbalanced squads, just give us an insight into your Harry Kane squad.
It's not that bad. It's not, because I haven't done the Salah thing as well. So it means a compromising goal. So it's Leno rather than Onana as a set and forget, still keeping Areola there. And then Trent, Bell, Shaw, Saliba and Bea. And then in midfield is Saka, Bruno Fernandes, Bowen, and Enciso, and Baptiste. And then up top, Haaland, Kane, and Archer.
Okay. Yeah, not...
That's,
so
I prefer
it's
that
not
one.
Horrendous. Of course you do.
Jules is going to listen back and copy it.
I mean, I don't hate that one. I like to start the season with a good bench, because you never really know what's going to happen in the early part of the season with rotation and that kind of thing. So I like to start the season with a better bench than this one provides. However, I do love seeing Kane in there.
Okay, I'm just going to quickly tell you my squad. It isn't a massive overhaul from before. And there's still a lot of question marks over my squad. But I've got Pickford and Leno as my two goalkeepers. My defenders, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Estupinan, Saliba. I've also gone for Botman as well, Jules, just because what Sam said before actually really persuaded me that I'm going to want him in a few game weeks. Why not get him in early? Kabore is my other defender. My midfield is Madison, Saka, Bruno Fernandes, Eze and Gibbs-White. I'd say two of those I'm pretty certain on in terms of Saka and Fernandes. The other three I'm still not really sure on. And then my front three are Haaland, Jesus and Joao Pedro. So there's still, I'm not totally set on that either. That Jesus spot is still very much up for grabs. I didn't really want to go in with three Arsenal straight away, but it looks like the Julian Laurent effect has paid off on me. And I seem to be going in with three Arsenal because he always persuades me that they're
enough.
So good.
You're only human, right?
Just quickly, obviously there's still loads for us to decide. I think we're all still up in the air. Sam sounds a lot more secure in her decisions than we are, Jules. Who are the players that are definitely going to be in your team come game week one? Jules, you go first. Or have you not got any yet?
No. I think Kane and Haaland for sure. Definitely. And then it depends how mad I go for Salah or Trent or both or none of them. But yeah, I might go a bit kamikaze straight away and go with all four and then see how that goes. But Sam makes a really good point, of course, and I think every manager should have that in the back of the mind. You can try to go with the four Trent, Salah and Haaland and Kane, but then you're going to miss out on all the points from Rashford, Saka, Bruno, Madison, all those kind of guys, Son, if you fancy him, you know, Kulusevski, all those kind of guys. So it's risky, of course, but you also know that if Salah, Kane and Haaland start well, then you're gonna be very happy at come the end of August. So it's you know, that's part of the game.
What about you, Sam? Who are your current locks?
Not that many, really. Haaland, Saka, Bruno, they're probably my locks. Trent, probably as well. I think they're the ones that I'm absolutely sure I'm going to go with. Saliba, actually, as well. I'm definitely going to have Saliba. The rest of them are up for debate. Even Kane, like, he's in and out, left, right and centre. Madison's the same. I have these moments where I fancy having Pedro Porro for a couple of games at the beginning just to for the fun of that. And then I remember that Spurs can't defend, so that's probably not a wise idea. Genuinely, I could fill my midfield slots twice over with players. And there's always going to be compromises and players that you can't have. So it's deciding whether I would rather have an extra premium and then, so like Kane, and then have Archer, or do I think that having a couple of mid-price players in there could actually outperform those two? And that's where the difficulties and the questions come.
Okay, so still absolutely heaps for us to think about, and I'm sure the listeners are feeling our pain with it as well, and hopefully enjoying tinkering. I am quite enjoying it. I'm particularly with the time difference here in Australia, I kind of quite like waking up in the morning, seeing what's happened with pre-season games and be like, oh, so-and-so's done well, oh, I'll bring them in. The other day I actually tweeted when Official FPL tweeted saying, anyone else taking your eye? And I was like, I replied to FPL and said, Joao Pedro, and then loads of people replied, and then you have a debate about it. And it's so good because there is so many different options. So I'm kind of scared, but also looking forward to the next couple of weeks sorting these teams out. And the good news is we will be back again with a couple more podcasts for you before that deadline, which is on the evening of Friday, the 11th of August. So hopefully we can help you, or maybe confuse you even more, because we all sound as confused as each other. But we can hold your hand through up until that FPL Game Week 1 deadline. Jules, enjoy your time in Australia. I think we've successfully managed to navigate our journey so that we don't actually cross in person.
I know, I'm coming to Sydney next week, so I'll see you there.
Brilliant. I'll be busy. Sam, what have you got planned for the next few weeks? I'm only joking.
Managing the kids being off school and mostly FPL decision making, I think, is going to be it's going to be taking up a lot of my time before we go on holiday for a little bit.
Lovely. Well, enjoy it, guys. And I hope you at home are enjoying you setting yourself up for the game. A reminder, our mini league is active, and I will promise to update everyone how you guys are doing throughout the season. We were really bad at it last season, but it is our target for the season to keep you guys posted so you can pit your wits against other listeners. IB3WLK is the code. Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you soon.